Welcome to KUOI News, bringing you all the news you need in 25 minutes or less on KUOI FM 89.3. It's October 10th, 2012, and I'm Caitlin Krasselt. On today's broadcast, a story about University of Idaho's Egg Days and the Clearwater Corn Maze from Allison Griffith. After that, Kaysen Christensen has the scoop on what's what in Chile. Today in sports, Theo Lawson gives us the athletes of the week after a weekend of success for Vandal Athletics. After that, Jake Dyer gives us his take on Miguel Cabrera and the Triple Crown. Finally, the boys from 4th and Downtown, Vandal Nation's own sports talk show, give us the lowdown on Vandal basketball player Kyle Barone and his recent suspension from the team. For the editorial board, Kaysen Christensen gives us his view on legislation regarding race and college acceptance. Finally, Bradley Burgess shares a rock and roll mixtape from RAR. But first in news, a story about a corn maze and UI Egg Days. Allison Griffith has the story.
The University of Idaho College of Agriculture and Life Sciences held Ag Days, bringing in alumni and prospective students, and opened the third annual Clearwater Corn Maze. Jamie Small, a senior from Eagle High School, said she really enjoyed Ag Days and seeing the college campus. She is getting ready to apply for colleges, and being able to see the campus and go to various activities made her fall in love with UI. Coming to Ag Days counts as a college visit for students, said Ann Boyd, an advisor for Family, Career, and Community Leaders of America at Eagle High School. She said it is a great opportunity for students to learn about the college experience, along with a campus tour, time spent at the rec center, a barbecue, and various competitions students could participate in. They all went to the Clearwater Corn Maze. "It was really fun," Small said. The Corn Maze is the brainchild of Dr. John Foltz, Associate Dean and Director of Academic Programs in the CALS Department, but he hopes it'll become the brainchild of the student. This year, the corn is 11 feet tall, and the maze is designed to celebrate the 100-year anniversary of 4-H in Idaho, he said. There is a 4-H four-leaf clover and 100 as the center of the maze, but the design also gives credit to the three missions of 4-H: science, citizenship, and healthy living, which are represented by the steer, state house, and bicycle, Foltz said.
"Very fun and time consuming. There was lots of difficult dead ends we had to face,"
said Tagarius Jones, asked what he thought about the maze. "They were offering some new attractions," said Foltz. "We had a pumpkin cannon this year," he said, "which will be shot off every hour on the hour." He hopes that eventually they can offer a pumpkin chunking contest, which is a contest with various machines designed to shoot pumpkins at different lengths. Said the corn maze is a great way to utilize experiential learning, having people learn by doing. "The maze is the ultimate experience for students to have fun while putting in a lot of work and learning what it takes to run a business, as they have committees with students on them to oversee different aspects of the corn maze." The corn maze is in Lewiston for multiple reasons, the main one being that the Lewiston Roundup are great partners. The land, water, and infrastructure required to run the maze take a percentage of the profit. But also, Lewiston is typically 10 degrees warmer than Moscow, which makes it better to grow corn, and they have more water capability. This is also a success because of the Kaufman family, who do all of the farming and get the corn ready for the maize in October.
Chili is a staple winter food item, but when it comes to competitive cooking, it can be so much more than that. Kaysen Christensen has the story.
Real chili doesn't have beans, tomatoes, or corn, according to this year's North Idaho Chili Cook-Off champion. Mike Costello, a food science researcher at Washington State and Tombstone, Arizona native, entered his Southwest chili into this year's cook-off for the first time. He said he was in it for the glory. His goal was to properly represent Southwest chili without the frills that denote chili in other parts of the country. According to Costello, real chili is just seasoned meat. His includes garlic, chili powder, and other spices. The 20th annual North Idaho Chili Cook-Off had 15 entries from students, faculty, and community members. Corbin Hall, president of the Food Science Club, said some contestants have participated for 5 or 6 years. The club charged $10 per entry, and the winner received a $50 prize. Local businesses donated gift certificates and other prizes for 2nd through 5th places. Money raised from selling the chili goes to support the Food Science Club activities for the year. The bulk of the money goes to trips to Portland and Sun Valley. Portland for the new Northwest Food Processing Expo, and Sun Valley to help with the Institute of Food Technology Intermountain Regional Meeting. Hall said the Northwest Food Processing Expo is a chance for students to make connections, tour food processing plants, and learn about jobs. At the IFT meeting, students get to make connections and work with a professional organization. The last time Costello entered his chili in a cook-off, he lost out to a vegan chili, which he said is an abomination. He said this year he was glad real chili won. For KUOI News, I'm Kaysen Christensen.
Now in sports, Theo Lawson gives us Athletes of the Week.
Athletes of the Week. Trey Farquhar, football. Idaho's senior kicker continues to make the case that he could be one of the nation's best. 2 weeks ago against Wyoming, Farquhar was 3-for-3 with a long field goal of 53 yards. Saturday against New Mexico State, the Redlands, California native was even better. He went 4-for-4 and connected on field goals from 32, 39, 53, and 55 yards out. The 55-yarder tied a career-long set by Farquhar last year at San Jose State. In addition to contributing 12 points to Idaho's total, Farquhar knocked down 2 PAT attempts. He's yet to miss a PAT this season. Farquhar was given the Place Kicker of the Week award by College Football Performance Awards. Jenna Ellis, volleyball. The true freshman defensive specialist holds a starting role on the Vandal volleyball team this year, but Ellis's best performance of the season came Friday in a 5-set win at Seattle University. The Pocatello native had a career-high 6 service aces, the second most by any WAC player this year. It's also the 6th highest single match total in Idaho history. Ellis tallied 10 digs, third most among Idaho players during Friday's game. Ellis's 27 service aces this season leads all Vandals. Jose Bendek and Cesar Torres, tennis. The South American duo played doubles together this past weekend's Boise State Fall Classic and won the Blue Flight Doubles Championship. Bendek, a Colombian native, and Torres, a Peru native, eliminated Seattle U's Ian Clare and Gus Orlando 8-2 in the first round, defeated Gonzaga's Levin Guillermo and Vladimir Mijatovic 8-5 in the quarterfinals, and took down the Zags' Alvaro Nizal and Vincent Varas 8-5 in the semifinals. In the final, Bendek and Torres handled Alfredo Desiati and Jason Proctor with ease, beating the Abilene Christian pair 8-3. For KUOI News, this is Theo Lawson.
Next, Jake Dyer gives us his take on the current generation, Miguel Cabrera, and the Triple Crown.
Each generation always has that special athlete, and those special moments that they believe signify their era, and they use it to justify that their era is better than another. While our era has been jam-packed with athletes that have excelled and accomplished plenty of their own feats, last week we witnessed a pretty special moment when Miguel Cabrera won Major League Baseball's Triple Crown. The illustrious Triple Crown, that some believe may never be seen again, in baseball and horse racing alike. Cabrera's numbers were astronomical, with a .330 batting average, 44 homers, and 139 RBIs. This year they were good enough to earn the accolades. Many years they wouldn't have been. But he faced the same guys as everybody else. It's a moment we should celebrate and hold in the highest of regards. Then why aren't we? Cabrera may not even win the American League MVP this year because of Mike Trout, one of the game's rising stars. Trout's season has been impressive, but giving him the award over Cabrera is nonsense. Not because of the Triple Crown, rather because one guy was sitting at home when the playoffs started and another guy wasn't. We wouldn't even be having the MVP debate if Cabrera did all those little things baseball players are supposed to do. You know, defense, running well. Cabrera is a hitter, and this is a hitter's award. In fact, Cabrera winning the award makes him only the 12th baseball player to ever accomplish the feat. Simply looking at the names on the list is enough to realize the magnitude of the feat. Cabrera, native of Venezuela, is also the first non-American winner of the award. Cabrera will forever be remembered with his Triple Crown peers, Ted Williams, Ty Cobb, and Lou Gehrig. It's a collective who's who of Major League Baseball history, but in this day and age, does it matter? Cabrera is being overshadowed by other teams, his past, you name it. It means more to baseball right now than this monumental accomplishment. This baseball season has seen the rise of the Washington Nationals, and their rise to success going into the postseason has caught the heart of baseball fans everywhere. The Tigers clawed and fought their way back into the playoff hunt, and when Cabrera should have been able to take a moment and reflect on his own personal accolades, he couldn't, because baseball is the ultimate team sport. The truth is, maybe Cabrera just isn't the big name we want for an award like this. At the age of 29, Cabrera's career has had some hills and valleys, but his numbers have remained solid. He's had some issues with alcohol, but look at the list of Triple Crown winners, and you will realize he isn't the only one. When Cabrera became the first Triple Crown winner since Carl Yastrzemski accomplished the same feat in 1967, there should have been parades and a menagerie of over-the-top antics that ignore the fact that the playoffs are most important, and we should be concentrating on them, because as Americans, we love celebrating personal success that takes place on the field. Cabrera's feat should bring the nation's interest back to Detroit, a city that was devastated by the economy. This moment should live in infamy. This is our chance to tell old-timers, this is our moment. This matters. For KUI News, I'm Jacob Dyer.
Finally in sports, the boys from 4th and Downtown discuss Vandal basketball player Kyle Barone's indefinite suspension.
In a situation that we've been following the last couple, as of yesterday, as you guys probably saw on our Facebook and on
In the Argonaut this morning, Kyle Barone, the Idaho Vandal men's basketball center, active all-time leader in points, rebounds, assists, steals, blocks. Could have even been a first-team all-preseason WAC, second-team all-WAC last year. I think we can all agree, probably one of Idaho's best players, if not their best, was suspended indefinitely by Idaho coach Don Verlin for a violation of team rules. Went on to say that Kyle needs to become a better citizen, a better community member of Moscow, and we actually just find out now. We'll give you guys the Moscow Pullman Daily News here. Just reports that Barone has been arraigned on a DUI charge, and I'll just go ahead and read what it says here. University of Idaho Center: Kyle Barone was arraigned on a DUI charge in Whitman County District Court Monday on the heels of men's basketball coach Don Verlin announcing the player had been suspended from the team. Barone was arrested on the Washington State University campus early Sunday morning after a campus officer witnessed him allegedly stopped in his vehicle eastbound in the westbound lane of Wilson Road. He was reported to have then crossed both lanes of traffic into a parking space and hit the curb, according to the police report. So now it becomes a little clearer here of why Kyle Barone was suspended indefinitely. Let's just start with this. Not talk about the impact. We'll get to the impact of Kyle Barone. Good on Don Verlin. You know, good on coach. And Sean, talk about that and what it means to step up and say, you know, my player screwed up. I'm going to tell everyone, and he's not going to be playing basketball for a little while here.
Well, it speaks to the character of the basketball team, the basketball program, and what it represents. And, you know, what the student athletes on this campus, you know, represent and the standards that they're held to the rest of us. Because, I mean, it could have been just as easy for Don Verlin, because the season doesn't even start for another month or so, to kind of wipe this under the rug and then, you know, slowly work him back in when the season started, because he's the team's best player. I mean, there's no telling what can happen to the team without this player. But he stepped up to the plate, said Kyle Barone's going to be challenged to do the right things now. You know, we're not going to kick him off the team, but we're going to give him the opportunity to come back. And if he doesn't do those things, then he's probably not going to come back. So nothing but commendments for Coach Don Verlin for doing the absolute right thing here.
So now Kyle Barone arraigned on these charges again. They are over in Washington at the WSU campus. Doesn't matter state to state. A Dewey's a Dewey. So we'll have to see what happens. Obviously, he'll have to a few more court appearances, go from there, some fines, different stuff. I'm sure, you know, we can't speculate on anything to that effect of what will happen there with Kyle. But what we know is he's going to be off this team for a little while, and we were actually talking to Sean O'Neill, who we've had on the show here a few times, a senior editor at Lindy Sports Annuals, and he was saying he wouldn't be surprised if this was something maybe, you know, on campus, whatever it may be, and he's back by the first game. And I said it'll be a little longer, and I think now we can all agree this is going to be a little longer. I wouldn't be surprised if this maybe even goes through non-conference season of Kyle being out.
Yeah, absolutely. It just depends on what he does. You know, they're probably going to have Kyle do a lot of things in the community or challenge him, say, you know, hey, you know, do something, show us. And, you know, it'll be up to Kyle to kind of go out of his way to do stuff for the community, you know, to prove that he's sorry and do the right things and obviously commit himself in the classroom and things of that nature. I wouldn't be surprised to see him by the end of the year, the calendar year, when conference play starts, but that'll be up to him.
Also, just got a tweet there from Nick Groff. Nick asks, any disciplinary actions for the football Dewey last spring? I'm assuming, Nick, you're talking about Trey Farquhar. I don't know if there was community service. What actually happened there? It wasn't really put out there. As far as we know, though, Trey has played every single snap that he's been able to this year, and there hasn't been a game between. Once he had that Dewey back there in the spring, the next game was against Iwu, and he played that one. So as far as on-field stuff, no, not that we can tell, but there might have been, and there probably was some behind-the-scenes stuff going on there. So now, guys, let's talk about the next step, and we're going to talk about this regardless, but this just adds to it. Kyle Barone's meaningfulness to this team. What does he mean, and how irreplaceable is he when really your only other true center is Joe Kammerer,
Yeah, we've yet to see some of the new faces on the team this year. I think we'll get a chance starting this week. They start practice on Friday, and then we'll be going going to practice for the next few weeks. There's a couple of new faces, a kid named Marcus Bell, a kid named Ty Egbert. Marcus is a JC transfer. Ty comes in as a freshman from the state of Washington, one of the top recruits in the state of Washington, if I'm not mistaken. But Kyle's experience is something that you can't replace. His experience against all these other WAC teams is something you can't replace. So I think you lose one of your leaders on this team, and now this makes Steven Madison the only returning starter on the team. So you have to find someone else who can – no one's going to be able to replace Kyle Barone, but I think you have to find someone who can do at least half of what he's done for this team the past 3 years.
For the editorial board, here's Kaysen Christensen to discuss race and its consideration in college acceptance numbers.
The U.S. Supreme Court will hear a case Wednesday about racial equality on college campuses, but not how you might think. A white student, Abigail Fisher, is seeking justice because she was denied admission to the University of Texas. She claims the school is trying to match its campus with state demographics. In 2008, the University of Texas took the top 10% of high school graduates and then filled its roster using race as an acceptance factor. However, the New York Times said taking the top 10% didn't satisfy the university's diversity expectations, and Fisher was left out. If this court rules in Fisher's favor, it would strike down an earlier ruling that allows colleges to use racial diversity as an admissions goal. At the same time, colleges cannot use race as the determining factor. The race question is a tricky issue. Colleges need diversity, especially in states like Idaho that aren't known for having the most diverse populations. The question is how best to achieve diversity. Some have called for race or ethnicity to be left off college applications completely, even though these questions are already optional when filling out the application. Leaving questions about race and ethnicity off applications would make each application equal. Applicant reviewers would only see grade qualifications, extracurricular activities, character references, and other factors. In this system, the unknown factor is where diversity on campus would come from. Would taking the top student applicants provide a slanted demographic like it presumably did in Texas? Some condone specific recruitment efforts among ethnic groups. Still others insist that recruitment and admissions efforts are better based on economic qualifications. Campus diversity is a critical issue. Sometimes it provides a stone to grind our teeth against. Sometimes we find out that we all aren't so different. In today's world, diversity includes not only race and ethnicity, but also politics, religion, sexual orientation, and a host of other qualifications. Perhaps it's time to shift our focus from race and ethnicity to include other diversity factors in college admissions. One solution might be letting diverse students flow naturally into college by putting more effort into recruiting and not considering race in admission decisions. Because at some point, focusing so intently on diversity hurts diversity efforts. For KUOI News, I'm Kaysen Christensen.
Finally, on today's show, here's Bradley Burgess with this week's RAR mixtape.
Rock is a music genre that has taken many forms. From punk to metal to indie, rock has been tossed around all over the years. This particular mixtape is dedicated to fun, hardcore, but not too hardcore, anthems that would be perfect for any outdoor fun fest. My Best Days by Polar Bear Club. Hyper-aggressive rock outfit Polar Bear Club created a cohesive and fun album in 2011 called Clash Battle Guilt Pride. This particular song showcases a mosh pit anthem that they're so good at perfecting. Add in some clever lyrics, relentless drumming, and vocals that make your throat hurt just listening to them, and you've got an amazing rock song.
I've been scraped and I've been bruised. I never had a love like this to lose. Yeah!
Capital M.E. by Taking Back Sunday. With five albums under their belt, Taking Back Sunday has quite the list of hits to choose from. Lead singer Adam Lazara's vocals make the creative lyrics in this song all the more interesting to listen to, while the killer guitars of Eddie Reyes and Matthew Fozzie just make you want to string along. God Bless You by Black Veil Brides. With their face paint, heavy leather, or larger-than-life songs, Black Veil Brides looks set to become the next Kiss. God Bless You is a song that showcases the band's heavy style and religious lyrics that send off an old flame. It's safe to say they have redefined rock and gotten it back to its roots. Next up, we got a cover of a Kelly Clarkson song, Since You've Been Gone by Day to Remember. How do you take a girl power anthem and make it a fun rock song? Simple. Get a day to remember on the phone. They dab up between screamo style for those fans and regular style for others, creating a varied yet cohesive song that will have even the most hardcore of rockers ready for more. Burning Down the House by The Used. Ah, 80s music. So many fun nostalgic memories. Updating those memories is quite a challenge, so rock group The Used decided to turn a great 80s song by The Talking Heads into a death anthem with crazy vocals and guitars slightly reminiscent to the original, but only slightly.
Here's the thing, we started out friends. It was cool, but it was all pretend.
For KUOI News, Bradley Burgess signing out.
That's it for today, but be sure to tune in to KUOI News every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at 9:30 and 3:30 for the latest in news from the University of Idaho student newspaper, The Argonaut. KUOI News and even more stories from The Argonaut are also available online at uiargonaut.com. For up-to-the-minute news, follow The Argonaut on Facebook and Twitter. It's October 10th, and this has been KUOI News on KUOI FM 89.3. I'm Caitlin Krasselt.